only witness issue is Mr. Carr, who I'm advised is on his way to his meeting, and he hopes he'll be here by 11:30. Given how long it took Commissioner McLeod to get him from Arrowtown, that may well be optimistic. And maybe something you can turn your mind to, Commissioners, about, you know, you may well conclude there's little bit of traffic issues at large in this hearing anyway, so you may in fact not need him, but he'll get here when he can. Otherwise, evidence has been pre-circulated. Apart from Mr. Galloway, who will read his executive summary, we don't have any additional summaries to present, given that most of the briefs of evidence were 8, 10, or 12 pages long. Fairly short and difficult to summarise. My legal submissions have been pre-circulated. I would assume they've been pre-read. And on that basis, I don't intend to go through them. They're there. What I want to do in my presentation is just to touch on aspects of the big picture, but also to start by providing a bit of the backstory for the benefit of some of the commissioners. We're in kind of stage two or stage three of the hearing on Bridestar, and because of these split hearing panels, some commissioners are fully aware of the backstory and others will not be. That's the purpose of largely the purpose of what I've handed around. And if I can just comment on those plans. My plan A comes from an earlier rezoning hearing. The Civitar Bridesdale Farm Development Limited is a subsidiary of Winton Partners. Winton Partners is one of the bigger, possibly the biggest residential land developer in New Zealand, currently in the process of delivering about 7,000 residential lots and houses across about 6 projects across New Zealand. Principal of that company is a man Mr. Chris Meehan and his wife Michaela. BFDL was a subsidiary established for the Bridesdale development, and BFDL purchased the land surrounded with the blue line on the lower half of my plan A. That resulted from the special housing area legislation. After that legislation was implemented, Chris Meehan established BFDL, purchased Bridesdale Farm, which was the farm occupying the land inside the blue line, and initiated the special housing area, which was recommended by council, approved by the government, and resulted in a resource consent and development of, shall we say, the northern part of Bridesdale Farm into about 140 residential lots. Little wee restaurant kind of commercial centre. Occupying the upper northern half of the land, and in the middle of the area coloured blue, surrounded by the blue line, is a funny little rectangular space containing 140 garden allotments, and each person who bought a residential lot in Bridesdale also purchased a garden allotment down on the river flat where they can build a garden shed. And a site visit, you'll see the first garden shed's actually been built. There's 140 odd of those little garden shed plots. Just looking again at plan A, when I talk about the river, so we have the river flat, the floodplain, there's the lower half of Bridesdale Farm, including the garden allotments. And to the left of that, in the darker colour, are two council recreation reserves. Longish, thin one, and beside it a more rectangular one. And strangely enough, below the left-hand one is a triangular-shaped area of land which is coloured light yellow. There's a third council recreation reserve, which council has not sought to rezone informal recreation due, I suspect, to a mapping error. I'm not aware of any other council reserves that have left zone rural. I think we just made a mistake. But there's a third council reserve there. So when I talk about the river flat or the floodplain being roughly half council recreation reserve, that's the left-hand half, and half Bridesdale farmland is the right-hand half, the yellow, light yellow colour. Between the two is what is popularly referred to or known as Hayes Creek Road, and is shown on some maps as Hayes Creek Road. That is in fact another council recreation reserve used for roading purposes, roading access down to a car park, which you can see if you just glance at my map B on the right hand side. That's Hayes Creek Road running down to a council recreation reserve car park down on the edge of the river. Also shows on plan A. Also by way of background, just again, this has been presented before, but we talk about the floodplain. What I've referred to as the floodplain, both the council land and the Bridesdale land, floods periodically. It last happened about 6 or 7 years ago. What happens is that when we have major rain events in this district, in this area, and the Quarra River, which you can see on the bottom part of my plan A, is in full flow, you'll see little Hayes Creek coming down from the top, running down the side of Bridesdale and running into the Quarra. When the Quarra is in full flow, Hayes Creek stops. It can't get out into the river. And it's like a bathtub. The water just goes boom, 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 across that floodplain. And then after the Quarra goes down again, it goes boom, 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 and all drains away. And it's a 1.5 to 2 metre flood level. Return interval every 6 or 7 or 8 years. So it is a floodplain that floods regularly. But it's a flood which doesn't have current. It just, like I said, like a bathtub. It fills up, goes back down again, right, any current problems. So in terms of structures, as long as you've got a structure that can take still water, it creates an issue, but not an issue that's too difficult to surmount. Now, in the SHA process procedure, as part of the resource consent, BFDL proposed that the Bridesdale Farm, half of the River Flat, be taken by councils as reserve and joined with other reserves. Now, there's a bit of an issue around Queenstown anyway, and possibly other districts where reserves are dealt with by the Reserves Act, which is not in the Planning Department, and the Planning Department and the Reserves Act team sometimes are not fully in tune. Queenstown faces a problem in that its planning for infrastructure across the board is behind schedule, simply because of the incredible growth pressures this district faces. Roading infrastructure, reserves infrastructure, most of the infrastructure is behind the eight ball on planning. One of the worst is planning for reserves, which you will have seen if you read the attachments to my legal submissions. Council doesn't really have a clue about what it needs in terms of future reserves for many of the areas, and it is just starting the major planning necessary to determine what land it needs. So of course, when you have a consent hearing, and you'll see from that proposed reserve area, it's vastly in excess of what the council would normally take as reserve. Councils are traditionally very reluctant to take responsibility for land if they don't need it, because they've got to look after it. And at the time all that went through, there was no master plan, no long-term plan. There was no basis upon which the council could agree to take the reserve as being needed for its future, for the future needs of the community, because there was no plan which said so, because the work hadn't been done.
But Mr. Colesbrook, that wasn't the reason it wasn't taken, was it? The reason was that the offer was made...
There was also a conditional offer, quite correct.
There was a conditional offer, provided that all the houses applied for obtained consent. And the panel refused to run from the house, so the offer was no longer an offer.
Quite correct. But there was also no indication from the council that they actually like that land as reserve if it could get it. I accept that. Anyway, moving on, Bridesdale's view has always been that river flat, which as you look at it, it's currently rural, and I've mentioned this in my submissions. It's completely isolated from other rural productive land by the road, the recreation reserve, the residential zoning, and the topography, a huge hill on its northeast side. So it's a little patch of rural land sitting there kind of by itself.
Is the fact that it's supposed to be amalgamated with the lot across the river relevant? That was one of the conditions of the Bridesdale subdivision.
I don't believe it's relevant to the issue I'm making in that it's an isolated piece of rural land. The bit across the river is on a hillside, can't be used for anything. So the land is connected to a title. If the other commissioners, we're talking about across Hayes Creek, not across the Quarra River. And I was like, hey, it's correct. Land on two sides. Which, as a result of the process, the SHA process ended up being amalgamated in one title because there were a range of legal reasons for that. But we still have this funny little patch of rural land sitting in the middle of nowhere. Well, in the middle of nowhere, but in productive terms, it's isolated. And Bridesdale's view has always been that the land would appropriately be used for some form of recreational purpose. That then leads to my plan B, which is also attached to Mr. Edmonds' evidence. The client is pursuing a tennis academy on that land. That plan is from a resources application which is about to be publicly notified. So it's all in process and running through the system. It's essentially a philanthropic venture. It's a $3 million, Kirka, $3 million tennis centre, proposed to be a tennis academy, proposed to be primarily aimed at local kids at the local high school who can perhaps take scholarships and become tennis experts and go off to American universities to get scholarships at American universities that have big sporting programs. Also includes a proposal to allow the public, for the public to have access to it for certain hours of the day. I'm just tabling that in the interest of full disclosure, because half the panel know about it anyway. It isn't the system, it is being processed. Clearly it's subject to resource consent challenges, given that we have 11.7 metre high buildings and land which is at least subject to a hearing currently classified as outstanding natural landscape. But it is going through the process. It also has an access issue because access, if it were to be consented, has to be through land controlled by the council. And separately, I think it's mentioned in the evidence, the council has just initiated a reserves management plan process for the whole of its Widgeon Place reserve that's the council reserves. It's either been notified or about to be notified. They've just started the planning of it. And if the tennis centre gets its resource consent, it will contemporaneously become involved in the Reserves Act process. Because one of the issues, if this venture eventuated, would be should access to it be via Widgeon Place, or via Hayes Creek Road, or via both. Issues which the council controls and are anticipated to be part of a wider plan for these lower river flats. Indications from the council are that they're too fussed about the tennis centre from a reserves point of view, but access issues have to be resolved. So that's just background to what's going on. The third aspect, my plan C is really, I'm just highlighting what was the focus of my legal submissions. And that's objective 38.2.1. The open space and recreation needs of Lissach residents and visitors are met through the provision of a wide range of quality open space and recreation zones to provide for passive and active recreation activities. I don't intend to get into the issue of why council is changing from a regime based on the Reserves Act and designations to a regime which has the RMA as an integral part of it. Mystifies Mr. Edmonds and myself as to why the council would go away from the power and freedom of designations to an RMA straitjacket. But the council has decided to do that, and we have this primary policy here that we are now seeing an objective in the district plan to ensure that the open space and recreation needs of the districts are met through the provision of reserves. And one of the fundamental questions I've raised in my legal submissions, given that the subject of this hearing is the appropriate zoning of the land, is that a starting point in my submission must be to at least consider the needs of the district, of the residents, in order to inform a decision as to whether the most appropriate zoning of this land is rural or a recreation zone of some sort. And that leads me to my plan D, which is attached to one of the proofs of evidence, Mr. Dr. Galloway's of it. And I've attached that plan proposed a simple question, which is addressed in the legal submissions to the evidence, is where are all these people going to recreate? Very fundamental question. Where are all these people going to recreate? And you've got numbers and all the rest of your documentation, but just look at that plan. Shot of a country is, I'm not sure, up to 900 or 950 lots. Lake Hayes Estate's about 650. That makes 650. Bridesdale's 140, that gets you up to about 1,800. Queenstown Country Club is 200 units. 200 units, we're up to 2,000. As a whole precinct over the north side of Ladies Marlhole, and that's from a council document. It's not notified yet. It's the latest thinking about council's plan for the urbanisation of the rest of the Ladies Marlhole. Estimates of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 resident units I've heard. Where are they going to recreate? We have the shot of a primary school, which the evidence you've been given tells you was sized and purchased for 600 pupils and now is about to hit 950, 3 years after, 4 years after the ministry bought it. Look, you know, the green bits are there. There's a community here going to be in the order of, I don't know, it's 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 people. Where are they going to recreate? Very fundamental question. Where are they going to recreate? Now, I attached to my legal submissions, and I draw your attention to it, I had to get a look at that, which was the recent submission of the Lake Hayes and Shutterby Community Association to the 10-year plan. And on page 6 of my appendix 2, it was just a wish list from residents within that district about developing Woodgin Place, basketball courts, skate courts, skate ramp, flying fox, motorbike, athletics track, events facilities, hockey turf, confidence course, BMX track, Frankton golf course, dirt jumps, soccer club, on and on, tennis courts. That's what the people are saying. That's what the residents of that area are saying. And one of my fundamental, and I'm not, I don't use the word criticism, because to be fair to Ms. Galavazzi and Ms. Edgley, the council hasn't yet done the work. And that's very clear from the Queenstown Event Centre RFP, which I also attached to my submissions, where they are right now going out to the marketplace to get an experienced recreation consultant firm, basically to advise the council what this district needs in the future. So we sit here in a hearing talking about the zoning of a block of land. And of course, the other point I want to make is, you know, every piece of flat land that can be have a house put on it gets a house put on it in this base, just about. It's a bit of an understatement, but. And yet, on my plan D, there's a big purple area there where you can't put houses. You can't put houses in because it's a floodplain. But you can have recreation. I forgot to explain on my plan B in case it needed it, which was two things. One is that neither of these zoning proposals would get this proposal through. The buildings are too big and too high, you'd still need consent, so it's got to go through the consent process anyway. But interestingly, those curvy rooms, which are polymembrane stretched over a framework, anchored on the side to walls, as you can see there, which are a double row of containers. Beauty of containers, you shut the door and they're watertight. So the theory behind this, this tennis centre, the floodplain theory, is that every 6 or 7 years when it floods, you shut the doors of the containers and walk away, and then after the flood goes down, you come back up, open the doors again, hose a bit of silt off the tennis courts, and you're back in business. So this is actually a real, practical, genuine, properly researched, it's all been lodged in the resource consent, services are available, it works, the floodplain doesn't bother it. It can be done. So it's flat land, you can't put houses on it, but you can use it for recreation. And there's a bunch of other recreational uses that don't necessarily perhaps need buildings other than perhaps toilets, which also can be done on a floodplain. So at a very fundamental level, you're being asked to consider what is the most appropriate zoning for the land we're dealing with. And amongst other things, you're being asked to consider whether that zoning would assist meeting objective 38.2.1, which I've quoted, in a complete absence of evidence from the council as to the future needs of either this community or the wider community. The information just isn't there. Not blaming council, behind the eight ball, too much to plan, too much to do, growing too fast, but the information isn't there. And I would suggest to you, you only have to look at my plan D and think about the question, where are these people going to recreate? And it's self-evident, there's a problem, there's an issue. Now, Dr. Galloway has presented evidence, this is his third crack on this, through Shut of the Country and through the Bridesdale hearing, he's back here again, saying the same thing, which essentially is there are demands here that aren't being met, and there is a shortfall, and there is a need. Now, what we're saying to you in this hearing is really quite simple. Given all of those issues, when you are determining the appropriate zoning of this land, and I call it the higher and better use or the preferred zoning, rural, it's of little or no value. It's got a few bullocks on it. It's not part of a wider farm. It can't be made part of a wider farm. It's been grazed to keep the grass down. Its value for rural productive activities is minimal. In the context of all of those people, that's my submission to you, is that its potential value as recreation land is significant. And the beauty of it here is, from the council's point of view, if it's private recreation land, the council isn't lumped with looking after it, isn't lumped with maintaining it. The council can sit there and say, well, it's great, private sector coming along, wants to have some of its land zoned for recreation purposes. Maybe the Franklin Golf Course people come along and talk to my client and say, can we shift our golf course? Maybe the equestrian people come along and say, can we put our equestrian centre here? The district plan, through this new chapter, now enables the council to actively think about, and I highlighted some aspects of my partnerships, private-public sector partnerships. Whereby the private landowner provides the facility, like is proposed with the tennis academy, and all the council has to do is allow access to it across the council recreation reserve. And otherwise faces no expense, and the community get a recreational benefit. So you're being asked to think about the appropriate zoning of the land, and at a very fundamental level, in my submission, this is a real world issue. We've got to step out of the thicket of the policies and the objectives, even though they assist, and look at that plan and say, where are these people going to recreate? And that big purple lodge, you can look forward. Sit here today and look forward 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and you can guarantee to yourself that land will be used. Somehow, some way, but all those people up there wanting all these facilities, so my client, quite frankly, at the end of the day, probably would be handing a river to somebody. doesn't necessarily want a long-term piece of floodplain. And he's sitting there saying, well, great opportunity. And all this district plan has to do is enable that opportunity. The council can decide later whether it wants it or doesn't want it or anything else. And the final point I'd like to make is relates to the fact that it is often said in RMA hearings that the RMA is a forward-looking statute. It's not just a backwards-looking statute. It looks forward. It predicts the future. It doesn't predict the future, but it looks at the future. And this, in my submission, ties this issue back to part two and the various elements of section 5, enabling people and their communities to provide for their economic and social well-being. Not necessarily doing it for them, but enabling them. You rezone this land, you would enable that community to go to my client and say, look, you've got a piece of land, it's zoned, we would like to do this with it. That's what enabling is about. And of course, you have to look at the adverse effects. But it's a forward-looking statute. And I have one more document just to hand around, which is current evidence of that. But again, in the interest of disclosure, this is taken from an application lodged with the council about 3 weeks ago. It's for a ferry. Service from Queenstown to Bridgestone. The proposed ferry route is on the front page. The next page shows the proposed jetty location at the bottom of Hayes Creek Road, funnily enough. The next page shows Queenstown Trail, the proposed jetty, the park and ride intended to operate from the existing car park off Hayes Creek Road. The next page is the jetty and its shelter and its all the bits and pieces to be done to provide a ferry service, which would basically get people from Bridgestone to Queenstown. Next page is just a visual showing where the car park is. But it's quite interesting, you can see on the left hand side of the picture the garden allotments with their little access tracks, and the one that's been built just off to the left, off the page to the photograph to the left. And you'll see the tractor and the tennis centre's on the far side, the proposed tennis centre's on the far side of the tractor. And you'll see the location of the shelter, and the final one is just the shelter building that's proposed. Now, it's just been lodged, it's going to be notified. No guarantees of the outcome, because it's a jetty on an outstanding natural feature. But given the phenomenal pressure in this district for alternative transport methods, and the huge effort being put into by council and ORC to create water transport to help alleviate the transport on the roads, you have to say the chances of that application jetty are probably fairly high. Which just illustrates that river flat. You can imagine if that happens, that car park won't be big enough. There's going to be activity down there. There could be cars parked there all day. You know, this is a key strategic piece of land where things like this are being looked at and are going to happen. In the absence of the press, I can, Mr. Evans, as trustees of the Trail Trust, can advise you that this current discussion is about a pedestrian bridge across the river at that point. Create loop tracks, and anybody who's familiar with what's been happening around Queenstown is aware that Alistair Porter's company is proposing a gondola from Frankton to the remarkable ski field, and that gondola goes down the south side of the river, funnily enough, to this river flat where there's going to be a big gondola station. It's got to cross the river and the rest is back. Now, all in the future, all subject to resource consent, finance and so on. But this is a growing town. Yeah, this is a piece of flat land at the Wachtobe Basin where you can't put houses, but there's a whole bunch of other uses being looked at because it's flat and it's in the Wachtobe Basin and it's strategically located. So I ask the simple question, two questions. Where are these people going to recreate? And given the two zonings, which is the preferred zoning? And then in my submissions, I kind of finish off with two points where I say, if the conclusion is, well, recreation is better than rural, and that is which recreation? Well, surely the starting point is the council's informal recreation. Spread it across the river flat. It's the obvious, avoid a split zone starting point. I do, however, raise a serious question mark about, and BFDL deliberately submitted to upzone the council reserves to active sport and recreation. Because if you look at the description of the two reserves and what they're there for and what they're proposed for, and you think about the shortage of recreational land in that area, what those people are going to need, it's going to be sports grounds of some sort, amongst a mix. And sports grounds should be active sport and recreation, not informal recreation. So I encourage the panel to say, well, in my submission, the council hasn't given sufficient thought, given that it is lacking information, it hasn't given sufficient thought to the potential of that land. And it should have zoned it active sport and recreation. At the end of the day, if it has that zoning and you want to use it for lesser activities, it doesn't matter. You can go backwards. But if you give it the informal recreation zoning and put a straitjacket around it, then you want to go to active sport with sports grounds, you're creating resource consent problems for yourself. Which is why the council's doing it. I mean, the RMA puzzles us. So I invite you to think about informal recreation zoning across the river flat. I invite you to think about, in reality, why not upzone it to active sport and recreation and enable the full range of activities? Let the council decide later what happens there. That's fine. And the only other issue between informal recreation and active recreation is the maximum building size goes from 6 metres and 100 square metres to 10 metres in height and 400 square metres in height. Well, if you're putting a building there, does it really make that much difference? Whether it's 100 or 400. The effects, the building is there, the people are there, the cars are coming to and fro, the kids are playing whatever they're playing. Does the building size make that much difference? And even if this land stays ONL, and you know there's a debate about that, it's a boggy rural hat with no ONL characteristics whatsoever, apart from the fact that it's part of a river flat, a river formation, which will always be obvious, regardless of what happens. A slightly larger building will really adversely affect anybody's experience of the astounding ONL that is the Remarkables and Ben Crichton in the river. My submission to you is that it's a nonsense to suggest that it will. So for that one real difference, 6 metres high, 100 squares, or 10 metres high, 400 squares, to enable the wider range, given that there won't be that many buildings there, this is a fun lane. There's not going to be buildings all over the place.
Do we take from that submission, Mr. Goldsmith, that White Tower isn't seeking to increase the height limit to 12 metres?
Oh, no, that I'm not resigning from that point. It's right, just
so that we really should compare 6 metres and 12 metres then.
Well, no, you know, for the zoning, regulation versus informal, it's 6 metres versus 10. Mm. But as an entirely different issue, you get to there, then...
Well, no, you could get to there first, and then you've got the choice. You don't have to do the zoning first. Do the rules first.
Quite frankly, that 10 centre is going to need resource consent anyway. I'm not going to stand or fall on 10 versus 12. The zoning is much more important. Yeah. The enabling zoning. It was just kind of... We just happened to have a building that's 11.7 metres tall. But arguably that's on the basis of that particular proposal, and it's going to be dealt with through a resource consent process anyway, so we're happy to have that argument at another time. Those are my submissions. Otherwise, I stand by the written submissions lodged.
Okay, two things first. Ms. Martin, can you give me exhibit numbers for those two?
Yep, I've got 15.7 and 15.8.
Sorry?
15.7 and 15.8. Yes. I mean, clearly you don't want the area that's been developed for buildings to be rezoned to act as sport and recreation. It's just unclear from the submission and from the documentation you provided whether it is everything south of the informal recreation land. And does it include the council's recreation reserve used as the road?
Sorry. I've got to confuse it. You're not talking about the dark blue towards the top of it?
No, I'm talking about, you've got a blue line surrounding the site.
Oh, surrounding the site, right.
Yes, sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So inside the site.
Yes. Bearing in mind that you have sought in stream 14 that some of the land that is shown as rural north of that informal, well, north of the garden plots, you've sought that be zoned residential, but not all of it. I mean, it
I suppose the real question is, between the two hearing streams, are you asking for all the land to be rezoned into the zones that the hearing streams consider appropriate?
That would be a good thing, yes.
Yeah.
I guess that is yes, because there is a bit in the middle which is kind of, I'm sitting here thinking, well, do you have a little bit split zone of rural, or do you just join the two up?
Mm. And the garden plots, does the Act of Sport and Recreation apply to that too?
Most people would probably consider gardening to be A, recreation, and B, reasonably active. So,
yes.
So it probably, given that's the activity, it's probably an appropriate zoning for it. If you're going to have private active sport and recreation zoning and you've got land set aside for garden plots, then it would logically include that. And I think the one above it, the dark brown above it, is already... It's a Mr. Edmonds map.
It's vested in the plots of my place.
Oh, that was vested. The little dark bit above, yes, beside the garden plots was vested in the council as...
It's recreation reserve.
That's recreation
yeah,
reserve.
That's stormwater detention.
Yes.
Ponds and other things too, yes.
And most of the little yellow bit above it, or half the little yellow bit above it, is subject to the MDR rezone.
Yes, that's what I mean. So that's in spring 14.
Yes.
And so what I'm suggesting, so what I put you is that between the two streams, we coordinate.
Correct.
And make sure that our decisions or recommendations are sensible over all the land. Because we've also got a movement of the urban growth boundary,
yes,
we've got arguments over whether O&L lines in stream 14.
Yes.
And
yes. You're right. Logically, the garden plots should be rezoned sport and recreation. The bit above it, probably likewise, and then the bit above that, just as you just explained, between the two streams.
So is that going to be in the form of a map or something to clarify that point, so we don't end up with bits of land that don't end up outside the stream? It's just unclear, that's all. It's
yep.
Really made clear.
We'll produce a little map.
Yep.
You don't have a problem with the council's approach through the plan, which is to zone land rather than rely on the old system of designation. Because it occurred to me when you made your comments, you were a bit critical of that and were saying, well, you know, why not stick to the old system of designation? And I think that was actually explained in the officer's report, because it means each piece of land you've got to have specific designation conditions attached to it. So I'm just wondering where you would have been if the council didn't have a zoning system. So if it simply did have brown areas of land, what would you be seeking?
Well, if the council hadn't notified, the rezoning wouldn't be. We would have been stuck with the zones that are otherwise there. And although BFDL's original submission proposed MDR zoning was liberally, that's never been pursued for the river flat. So absent this chapter, this is a stage two thing. In chapter one, the land would remain rural. But because it's stage two, as introduced in chapter one, this new zoning, BFDL says that's the appropriate zoning, and is going, essentially going along with the council's, we aren't challenging the council's change in approach. The person was puzzled about it, but we're not presenting any evidence for challenging it. That's the council wants to decide how it wants to manage its affairs.
But it has provided the zoning framework of active sport and recreation does seem to dovetail quite well with what you're seeking.
Absolutely. No. In actual fact, the notification of stage two in this chapter created an opportunity that wasn't there before.
I suppose I have one of clarification of something that was involved with some of the earlier hearings. The O&L status of the land, I take it, is that under challenge?
Yes.
It is under challenge. It's separate.
Hearing stream 14.
Okay. So I take it from what we're reading in 50 or paragraphs 18 to 20 that the primary concern we have is that the council seems, well, from what I understand, submission focused on the mechanism for managing its existing reserve stock in the district. It hasn't really looked at the issue of what the objectives and policies are saying about the need for future reserve stock. So it's a very much a sort of a status quo type position that seems to be. Is that really what you're concerned with the way the government's approaching this?
Yes. I think they've started down the track of finding another way to manage the reserves, but where they've ended up is actually a much, it's actually a very different thing.
Yeah.
And a thing which leads to this panel having to consider what is the appropriate zoning of this land, in my submission.
A couple of questions. Just so, looking at the tennis academy as an example of the sort of private redeveloped recreation activity that could go on this land. You're saying under the rural zone it's requiring resource consent. But I'll ask Mr. Edmonds this as well, but are you saying that there would still be a resource consent needed under the active sport and recreation zone? And for what?
Under the informal recreation zone it would need consent because all buildings are discretionary. Under the active recreation zone, it would need consent.
That's power down.
The buildings would require consent,
yeah.
Because they're over 400 square metres and over the 10 metres in height.
But the activity would be permitted?
The activity would be permitted.
In both zones or just in the active sport and recreation zones?
The lights came back on. I think it's both zones. I think the active... As long as it's not commercial, I think if it's commercial,
it's different. Yeah.
If it's commercial, it's different. But if it's not commercial and doesn't involve buildings and it's just recreation, then I think it's permitted in both zones.
So the zoning sort of has an activity pathway, I suppose, which
yes.
is different to being in the rural zone.
Yes.
But and so the consenting requirements sort of start to become narrowed down to if they're buildings or not, and if you're in the active zone, the scale of those buildings. So it's
yes.
sort of narrowing the matters of concern in the consenting pathway.
And also from memory, the type of buildings is different between the two zones.
Yes, and I think
one zone allows...
One colour controls and the other doesn't, mm-hmm. yes.
But I think one zone refers to club buildings. I think it's the active zone allows club buildings
yeah.
as permitted, but I don't think I think the informal recreation zone requires consent for club
yes.
buildings.
I mean, one of the things that the council officers have told us is that, I mean, whether they're right in this or not, they've told us that that the zone rules for both those zones have been written bearing in mind that the council has underlying additional controls through the Reserves Act and Reserve Management Plans, and that they written fairly liberal provisions for each zone that are not bespoke to any particular piece of zoning. They are across all of the informal zones and all of the active zones, and then and with limited resource consents, but with the more detailed refinement of those what's appropriate in each particular reserve being through the Reserves Act. Now that wouldn't apply, and they're concerned that doesn't apply if it's private land. Do you see the need for, I mean, if private land is going to start to be zoned under the zoning approach, do you see the need potentially for bespoke provisions on any particular reserve? And Ben Lomond's a classic example. It's got lots of private activity there. It's not private land, but it's got lots of private activity. And it's ended up having to have its own bespoke set of provisions. Is that something that you could envisage for the private parts of the zoning?
My first answer, which is in my legal submissions, is that I take issue with the council saying, trust us.
Yes, I know you.
We have another level of control.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can trust us to do a better job or impose greater controls than the district plan allows.
Yes, and that's what they are differently saying.
And the council, my response is the council's a landowner. Council, you no more trust the council to look after other things than a private landowner, because the council as landowner has other obligations. The council as landowner of recreation reserves to meet the needs of the community has obligations that are, and drivers that are different from RMA drivers. So my first point is that there's no justification for the council as landowner getting special treatment. My second point was that I don't see how these rules are designed for council reserves that don't also apply to private land. It's the same rules. And if, to use an example, if a 6 metre high, 100 square metre building in the former recreation zone can be built by council without any control, without any RMA control, then there's no rational legal reason to say, well, the private landowner should be under a different regime. They're both landowners. Secondly, should that lead to bespoke provisions for each reserve? I think the answer to that question is, well, in this, it might do, in certain circumstances. But in this process, how many private landowners have asked for the zoning? So if in fact that's an issue, it could be dealt with. If, for example, it was thought that this particular piece of land, because of its characteristics or whatever, should be subject to an additional control of some sort, that can be done in this process. We're saying this piece of land should be rezoned. We're saying we think the existing rules are adequate and deal with all environmental RMA consequences. And the panel would think a little bit more control than it was necessary, or the officers would say, well, if you're going to zone it private, you should add this control and that control. We're open to that.
Okay.
So it may be that a reserve needs a bespoke mechanism. It may not. But in this process, you only have to deal with the people who have asked for it. You don't actually have to be thinking about, oh, what if everybody wants this rezoning? Because they have to go through, anybody else has to go through a plan change or a variation to get the rezoning. And if someone else comes along and wants to do what Bridesdale does, they can apply for a private plan change, and the council can look at that piece of land and say, oh, well, this piece of land should have this control as well, for whatever reason.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much for that.
Just before you ask any more questions,
because the recorder's gone down, isn't it?
The recording, I've got backup recording, so that's fine.
Yes.
Lights will be back on soon. They're just waiting for the generators to kick in.
Right, so they should come on at some stage.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just,
they've got lights.
Are they happy to be working in the dark? Because it's okay for using a computer or a tablet, but
been doing it right through this process. Been doing it right through this process so far.
Someone elected. You know, people could be more unkind than that. So, in that case, we'll carry on and trust that the lights will return at some stage.
That's all my questions.
Not really, to be honest. I can just about see the paper. But one point, just it's a minor point, but the containers that you said are waterproof and you close the doors and floods and where we go, aren't they going to float away?
I presume they'll be bolted down. Or the engineers
all over
looking
it.
After this, are they bolted or something?
They won't float away.
They're going to be on concrete. They're going to be on a concrete base. And
thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that did occur to me as well, there's a lot of evidence that's pictorial evidence that's been presented. It's all subject to, and I'm a relative novice to this, but subject to another process. How valid is it to consider, for example, the KJET?
Well, you can't assume it'll be there. You can't assume it'll be consented. Same with the tennis centre. It's got to go through a consent process. It may or may not get there. I was more trying to demonstrate with that was it's a bit of flat land in the Wakatobi Basin where you can't put houses. And there are and will be demands on the use of that space. And it's a resource which should be, in this process, zoned where it could enable a range of potential uses. Whether it's a tennis centre or not, or the ferry building. I mean, in fact, the ferry's outside the zone. The ferry's on the riverbank, so the ferry's actually probably all outside the zone. It was just that it's a strategic piece of land. And its future, in my submission, isn't and shouldn't be rural.
And one further as well, it could be a question for Mr. Carr, I'm not 100% sure, but Mr. Carr, his evidence seems to rely on the fact that the recreational use of this piece of land is contained within Lakehead Estate, short of a country, but lots of other bits of evidence, yourselves included, tends to broadcast that a bit further across the state highway, so you actually, I'm just wondering how that, if there's a conflict there, if it stacks up in terms of the traffic evidence.
You need to put that to Mr. Carr.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, in that case, we'll turn to witnesses. Mr. Mike. Mr. Knight's evidence on infrastructure, admirably brief, Commissioners, has been circulated. He's here to answer any to confirm his qualifications are there.
Yep,
it's all there. He's here to answer any questions.
Mr. Knight, do you have any questions?
I read it, but I don't have any questions.
Without knowing the exact nature of any facilities and therefore the surfacing demands, I cannot determine for certain that the existing infrastructure will have capacity to serve the proposed land uses. So in assisting us as to whether this is an appropriate zoning or not, I mean, how can we be satisfied that that appropriate infrastructure can be made available given the range of activities that could be permitted within these zones?
It's kind of from what we have at the moment, I think we have the infrastructure exists to service it, but without knowing the extent of what we are proposing, it's kind of a circular sort of thing. There is more capacity further along the line, further up the hill, so I guess if for some reason we ended up with a huge amount of infrastructure required in the zone, it's just a matter of building more to connect to that.
Have you looked at what could happen in this area as permitted activities within the active sport and recreation zone, for example, and what sort of demands they could create?
Probably not specifically, no.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Soak rates in a floodplain are always going to be an issue. You do mention that any structures on site will need to be raised above the surrounding ground. I presume that becomes the overall height.
Yeah,
so the ground
is. There's been a study done to see where the 5-year return level is, so kind of above that, yeah.
And so how high would that be, the platform roughly?
Above the ground at the moment, it's less than a metre, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Dawson, the point you raised, if I can say from a legal point of view, there are two responses. One is that there's always an issue of connecting into council infrastructure, and sometimes you need to upgrade it. And the second is, if that was in any way a concern, one could add a restricted discretionary activity standard into, if back to our previous discussion, all that would be needed for the rezoning would be a restricted discretion activity status for with discretion restricted infrastructure, water and sewage, and then that could be addressed at the time. I mean, it's highly unlikely to be an issue, given the floodplain and the lack of, unlikely there's a whole bunch of buildings and that sewage and water is available there now, but it could easily be addressed by another rule or standard, if that's a concern.
Yeah, I mean, it's the scale of buildings between the two zones that seems to me to be the biggest difference. Both the activities that may require buildings that are permitted more easily, and the size of the buildings. I mean, you said, well, one 400 square metre building, but actually it doesn't say there should only be one 400. No. There could be lots of them. Now, I know there's a floodplain and there are issues, but people always seem to be able to get around those issues as well with innovative solutions. So it's whether we know enough about the effects or the requirements of the built form within the active sport and recreation zone without thinking of some bespoke provisions. Yeah.
Well, we have to supply, after the hearing, a small map. Also take leave to give Mr. Edmonds to turn his mind to an appropriate standard or rule which would enable the council, which at the end of the day it's infrastructure, water and sewage. Yes. It's primarily water and sewage. I mean, telecom and power tend to take care of themselves. It's water, sewage and potentially road that would enable the council to decline consent if there's an infrastructural issue. Because the council reserves are under the same uncertainty. They're currently zoned in formal recreation, not quite sure.
Yes, but that has much more limitations on built form than the other zone.
But you're quite right. I mean, the council shouldn't be in a position necessarily having to provide infrastructure for permitted activity without having the power to say so. So yeah, we will address that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Skelton. Same applies to Mr. Skelton, Commissioners. Evidence has been circulated, and Mr. Skelton has previously, this is a Commissioner Nugent will recognise some of this evidence was presented in the ONL classification hearing to a degree, but he's available to answer any questions.
Question, I guess, that I'm going to ask everybody. Have you assessed, to what extent have you assessed the effects of permitted buildings and any number of them anywhere in the site in any context over this area and if you have, how have you done that when you don't know where they might be, how big they might be, what their design might be, the number, and particularly the cumulative impacts of that?
Right, I did have a look at that. Like you say, the main difference is 100 square metres or 400 square metres of a building. We also have a 5% building coverage, so the site itself is approximately just over 16 hectares, I recall. And I think the 5% building coverage would allow somewhere around 8,400 square meters of built area. And then looking at that, it ended up being somewhere around, I considered it in the frame of a rural residential type development, and where we create 1,000 square meter building platforms. So that would essentially make about 8,000 square meter building platforms in the area. Ratio of that would be one building platform for 2 hectares. That was sort of my rationale of looking at what the openness of the site, how that would be retained. And it would equate to sort of more of a rural lifestyle type development if we had 8,000 square meters of built form on the site. I would say that's probably a very unlikely scenario, but there is, that's a method
to assess the effects of built development. The difference between a 400 square meter building and a 100 square meter building, I think there is a difference. But again, if you're looking at a collection of 100 square meter buildings in the vicinity of each other, as opposed to one larger form, the difference in that is really just the visual access and potentially have trees and open space between those buildings. The actual character effects would be, there wouldn't be much change in character effects, in my opinion. I mean, collection of 100 square meter buildings and one larger 400 square meter building.
I'm struggling to see how the sorts of parameters you've raised, like whether they're a collection or not, and whether there is vegetation around them, or how they're where they're positioned on the site, how that can be managed through a permitted activity pathway, as opposed to requiring some further more specific assessment in a resource consent context.
Well, as I understand, any application would be subject to the provisions in the plan, which, what is this? I think it's, part 38.15, the landscape assessment matters. So if an application was made, that then those landscape assessment matters would be, need to be considered.
But only if a resource consent is required?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
And the 400 square metre building for 10 metres in height doesn't require a resource consent? Lots of them.
I calculated 14 from here.
I mean, I can't actually.
I calculated 14 buildings, possibly from the number you
prescribed. I mean, right. Mr. Edmonds may be able to confirm, but I can't see the 5% building coverage in the rules, but perhaps it's.
I was following the advice of Dr. Galloway and Mr. Edmonds on what would be permitted.
Yeah, so perhaps Mr. Edmonds can confirm whether or not there is a building coverage rule in those zones. I can't see it. No, there isn't. No,
that's a designation. There's a bit of confusion here between the.
Yeah, that's the old rule. Trying to reuse old evidence isn't always work. So there's no 5% coverage. Yeah, all right.
And
the ONL status is under. Appeal anyway, but in these zones there are.
That's not a challenge.
Sorry.
Appeal.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm challenge. Oh, you have a
stroke 14.
Okay, it's a stroke 14. We can have them. I'll go keep out of that. All right. Well, thank you for your answers. That's fine for me.
Just one, it was just the image that you provided, which is image one as part of your evidence. And would you describe that as a rural outlook?
It's a rural foreground to a more urban outlook. This is the part of my submission in the outstanding natural landscape, stream 14, is that the edge of what is considered in the notified OEP to be an ONL is actually, the edge of that is basically defined by urban development. And especially in looking in this context, what you're seeing is urban development with a foreground of open pasture.
And I take your point, leaving the ONL aside for one second, but the there's open pasture in the foreground, there's rolling hills in the background, it's certainly a rural feel. And with 14 buildings in it, would it still maintain the same characteristics?
You could still maintain a sense of openness.
I take it from your evidence, Mr. Skelton, that you've essentially assessed the effects similar to your screen 14, that it should not be ONL. Is that correct?
I've tried to set the ONL matter aside and just consider the effects of potential rezoning on the landscape as it is and as it's in its context. Taking into consideration the designated Widgeon Park and the development to the west of the site, potential development to the west of the site.
Galloway again has prepared his evidence, and I was just going to ask him to read his summary, his executive summary, pages 8 to 12 of his evidence. Can you just ask me that, Mr. Galloway? Sorry, Dr. Galloway.
The river flats offer a wide range of recreational potential, particularly when taken in context of the existing and proposed residential development in Brysdale Farm, Lake Hayes Estate, Shotover Country, Queenstown Country Club, as well as proposed development along Ladies Mile across State Highway 6, Quail Rise West, and Tucker Beach. The AS&R zone has been applied to 4 sites in the Wapitoka Basin, 2 sports grounds in Queenstown, and the sports grounds in Arrowtown and the Billbrook Cricket Club. The river flats are similar in topography as the existing property zoned as AS&R in the Wapitoka Basin and provide a larger space for incorporation of multiple recreation facilities under the AS&R zone. There is no available land that I'm aware of in the immediate area to the residential developments mentioned above, which is suitable for recreation activities identified in the AS&R zoning, that has not already been developed for residential housing, agriculture, or other uses. The river flats consist of approximately 35 hectares of flat open land. Previous research and evidence I have submitted to council hearings supports the use of river flats for recreation and are consistent with the stated objectives and policies identified for the AS&R zone. Developments since that evidence was submitted have not addressed the shortage of recreation facilities in the proximate area, nor more generally in the Wapitoka Basin. The AS&R zone is appropriate for the river flats due to 3 factors: its suitability, its area and topography, as a location for selected activities, the lack of available sport and recreation resources in the area given the proximate population and communities, and the lack of future opportunities to develop such facilities in other nearby locations.
Just one question, really, and that relates to, you've set out in your evidence basically the limitations that are currently under the plan in terms of zone and recreation space for active recreation purposes. Mm. It seems to me, looking at this area, its immediate primary catchment is going to be Brysdale, Lake Hayes Estate, Shotover Country. But do we have any real information on what the specific needs of those areas might be as opposed to just recreation generally? For example, the tennis facility one imagines would basically serve the entire district and probably beyond, so it may not be particularly aligned to the needs of the immediate residents of neighbourhood.
Well, if we take what the Lake Hayes Shotover Country Community Group put forth in their evidence in terms of a laundry list of things that they would like to see, and then also taking into account my previous evidence where I conducted a gap analysis and looking at what was being proposed for the section area 1F over in Shotover Country, there was a list of potential facilities presented crosses over both of those sets of data, which are being asked for by members of the community, but they would also support recreation, or the recreation needs of the larger basin, most of them, I would think, yeah.
Given that this area does flood regularly, do those sort of activities being sought, are they compatible with the sort of situation that's anticipated with the tennis club, where you have to specially design buildings so that they are resilient, if that's a word for it, for events of that nature? Because normally you wouldn't expect areas like this to be subject to that kind of hazard.
What comes to mind when I take into account the flooding are those activities that have the majority of their content or their activity space is open space. So you could take the Eagle Brook Cricket Club grounds as an example, where essentially you have a toilet block and a changing room, and then a cricket pitch. Now, a cricket pitch could be designed so that it's resilient to the flooding. As Mr. Goldsmith pointed out, it apparently doesn't have a current running through it, so it's a big eddy where the water will come up and go down and you'll have debris left over. So with that in mind, there are a wide range of activities from cricket through to the equestrian hardened facilities such as pump tracks that would serve the children of the area quite well, as opposed to, at least in my mind, however many 400 square meter buildings you could actually fit in the space. It's, to my mind, more about how would you design the whole area so that it's got minimal facilities, so that when that happens, the recuperation is a matter of hosing it off.
So you'd expect that the kind of recreational activities might be needed by the immediate community and beyond. Activities just need space more than ancillary buildings as such.
So the types of buildings that come to mind for me are toileting and changing and storage. And in my evidence, I talk about the interaction between this space and the river, which I hadn't seen the KJET proposal before that, but that's kind of an example where in the zone rules, there's meant to be a development of the relationship between the land and the water and those activities that take place, which now currently doesn't exist. There's a parking lot where people can take a boat sort of through the willows to the river, or walk along the trail to an open area and access the river. So that would be an example of storage, potential toileting and change rooms. I didn't have in mind facilities that were expansive covered facilities, like you might have a tennis court that's completely inside, where you've basically got a shed.
Or grandstands, that kind of thing.
Grandstands are pretty resilient, I would think, to the flooding issue, especially if they're built in as a terrace.
Okay.
So I think it's a matter of design.
Yeah.
You're being creative about it.
Okay, thank you.
Just on page 11, you're talking about the BMX and the mountain bike jump park. I'm just wondering why you consider those sorts of activities would be inappropriate or unable to be established in the informal recreation zone. And I have in mind that there's a BMX park in Lismore Park, for example, which is informal recreation.
You're asking a PhD in recreation to settle on the definition of recreation, which has never happened in the history of.
I was thinking in terms of what's allowed and what isn't.
I've had to actually set aside the name of the zones because in the progression from informal doesn't go to active.
But
it's not a linear progression.
But maybe that's the answer. You've already answered the question. In coming to that, you have looked at the names of the zones without looking at the details of what is and isn't allowed. Is that?
No, I have looked at.
Yeah.
But it turns into a rabbit warren of what about this and what about that.
Well, that's the specialty of our profession.
So, just to simplify it in my own mind, I'm thinking about, okay, what's the potential in this space? What's the opportunity here for recreation that would actually be survivable in the location because of flooding, but also serve the needs of the community? And with the zoning rules seem to me to be primarily about facility and what kind of facility you can have there. Now, there's all sorts of cricket pitches, from the backyard through to what we have at the event center, which incidentally isn't active sport and recreation zone. It's zoned as community purpose. So there you have a large collection of sports fields that aren't zoned as active sports and recreation, which adds to the confusion in my own mind about what's meant by those names.
I had already asked the council officers on that issue, because Pembroke Park is in the same category.
So again, it seems to me to be about the level and facility and infrastructure that's needed there, and the sort of countervailing force is the river.
But back to my question, which was, the BMX and jump parks, given the rules in the zone, which happens to be called informal recreation, would it be problematic to have them in that zone?
In terms of the BMX park that's envisioned, it could potentially, because what's been proposed previous is a competition grade BMX track, which could potentially host nationally significant events.
Which would require stands and et cetera and buildings, because they have a building as a start point, don't they?
Well, it's a big hill,
yeah.
Which you already have there, so there's potential to build it in.
There's a few houses.
So in my mind, that's there's the potential there for to have that facility, but doing that under the lesser piece would constrain it. And I believe the height of the start hill is something around 8 meters. That's off the top of my head. So there are some.
That's not a building. It's just a hill. It's just earthworks.
Okay. I won't go into that.
Okay.
I'm asking this because of my ignorance about the history of this area, but you've obviously given evidence previously.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what recreation areas or contributions for recreation have been provided over time through the Shotover Country, Lake Hayes Estate, Bridesdale developments in this area?
In terms of development contributions
or areas set aside as reserve contributions towards reserves?
Mr. Goldsmith will have the detail on that, but I can say that the entirety of that Area 1F...
I don't know what you mean by that, sorry.
That's the Shotover Country Gap Analysis piece. They were seeking to use the development contributions on site. And so those included BMX, an equestrian area, a community center, and a rugby pitch. And the only thing and a wetland restoration project. And the only things that survived that process is apparently the money was shipped somewhere else and not used on site was.
There's a surprise.
The rugby pitch, and the wetland, which is. They've both since been vested to council as reserve spaces. And in terms of Lake Hayes, I believe it's McBride Park. But I wasn't around for that, so I'm not quite sure what the story was there. And then you can see the reserve areas on Exhibit D within the Shotover Country area. So the previous evidence that I presented pretty much ran from the rugby grounds through to the wetland in terms of that space as a potential from development contribution. But at the time, I think it was the shot of the bride scale evidence. I actually got the, it came to mind, what we have is a large area here, and I just started calling it Cowrout Junction, just to not have to say all the names. And you've got a spine running right next to the river. Now, regardless of ownership issues, just looking at the potential for recreation use, there's a corridor there that sits adjacent to the Cowrout River. And it has multiple access points, both river, foot traffic and bike traffic, as well as road access, that's largely available in terms of it's flat and undeveloped on either end. And there's some potential, I believe, for the hilly section in the middle to incorporate further trails or other recreation amenities in that space as well. So, from my perspective, looking at the lack of recreation space that's currently there, and the potential for the open space that is there, that this to me seems like an ideal place to support the recreation needs of these residents. And I include Tucker Beach, Quail Rise West, and the area across the highway. In part because they're included in the school zone. So
just to come back to my thought, and you obviously can't answer this in detail because you haven't been involved in all of it, but from your perspective looking at now, or recent times, all these houses have been approved and many of them actually developed, and I'm sure at the time there was some turning of mind to the recreation requirements of those people. But what's eventuated on the ground in terms of council-owned reserves or land that is available but hasn't yet been developed is not enough.
No, I wouldn't think so.
No. So whether people turned their mind to it adequately and the money went elsewhere or it just wasn't available, it wasn't taken, and what we've ended up with is not enough.
Yeah. Yes.
Can I assist, having been involved in a lot of the background to that, with that question? I can confirm, traditionally under the Local Government Act, development contributions, land for reserves, 27 square metres per? 27 square metres. The figure of 27 square metres of land for reserves has been, I don't think it's changed over the 30 years I've been in business here. Under the Government Act. Land for it, so you do develop like shot of the country, develop contributions, you've got land for reserves, you've got improvements on reserves, and then there's water, sewage, and so on. Land for reserves, 27 square metres for 30 years, to the best of my memory. And then you write a cheque for improvements to reserves, like play equipment. Developers, unless they absolutely can't, will always give the required land for reserves, because it doesn't cost them money, and they'll persuade the council to spend the check for improvements on reserves on the reserves in their development. Standard process. I can tell you that for Shotover Country, it complied with all its land for reserves requirements by provision of land. And if you look at my in Appendix D, it's essentially the green bits and the yellow bits. I think the rugby ground out the end is an addition, a later addition. I don't think that was a requirement. But the rest of those little green bits and the yellow bits were shot over country's required land for reserves. Lake Hayes Estate is a much older development. I would say with 99% certainty that developer, I consented it, I just can't remember, also met their land for reserves requirement by giving land. Essentially McBride Park, I think. Might be a couple of little bits there. And possibly the Winton placements. I'm not sure where they came from.
You possibly don't.
Yeah. those two down there. I can confirm that Bridesdale, which I consented, complied with its land reserve requirements. So, almost certain, looking at that plan, that the requirement for land for reserves has been delivered by all those developers. The issue, which I think you've focused on, is that in 30 years, the requirements, there isn't a big picture plan. So in 30 years, that 27 square metres, I don't think it's ever been revisited. Where it originally came from, I don't know.
And whether, potentially all being taken for smaller reserves, more neighbourhood, local reserves, mid-sized reserves, and not necessarily being a focused contribution towards the bigger scale reserves that might also be needed.
And the problem is, of course, if you're doing shit of a country on its own or locate a state on its own, then it's not big enough to generate demand for a cricket pitch or a... Those things tend to have to be done by the council. I mean, the Queenstown Peninsula and all of those parks have been created by the council, or not the council, to provide for the needs of the community. It didn't come from...
No, but some councils have more sophisticated development contribution policies where they have a land requirement for local reserves, and then they have a money requirement for, say, sports fields.
Right.
So they divvy it. You know, they know what they need for a whole range of different things, and require, no matter how big the development, to provide a contribution. Some of that can't be given in land. But I mean, there has been this big wedge in the face.
Yes, that's come from somewhere.
Yeah.
That's come from somewhere. And certainly, the 2017 strategy was preceded by the 2002 strategy, which was preceded by an earlier one, which I recollect said Queensland District has vastly more land for reserves than it needs.
Yes.
But they're all kind of out here, they're not sports fields for the people. So, and I think to be fair to the council, that RFP that is attached to my submissions is finally an attempt by the council just issued to actually stand back and say, what does this community really need? We're kind of, unfortunately, we're in the middle of the process.
Thank you.
The process is the process. We're always in the middle of the process.
Just when you're growing as fast as we grow.
Exactly. The just one question. You mentioned that the you consider this. There's a couple of questions. You mentioned that you consider this ideal for a recreation zone, and that's the whole strip. Just to clarify, next to the cow road, is that correct?
Yes.
And that's including the council reserves, regardless of ownership, all.
Yes.
To what is on the map that was given us today, map D, it's got horse grazing at the back of Shot River Country.
Yes. And I would suggest to you that that's currently what it's being used for, except for the areas that are fenced off and used for grazing.
Which is.
For example, the Widgeon Park area, Widgeon Place area. There's over time developed a set of trails in there that the small kids on their dirt bikes, motorized dirt bikes, are using to learn how to ride dirt bikes. And that's, I don't believe, overseen by anyone. It just occurs on council land.
I guarantee that the minute they start doing it more often on a Saturday, it will be overseen by someone.
Down there quite a lot.
Yeah. No, it's chasing dirt bikes to a place that they can do it without being annoying is probably something that will just happen forever. The equestrian centre, because it's quite a bit near the potential equestrian centre. I'm always aware there's a massive conflict between horses and just about everything else in terms of recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there enough area then there to satisfy, for example, one of the things that is cricket, golf, frisbee golf, and a horse trail?
When I look at the purple area on Appendix D, I see enough space there to accommodate an equestrian center, which is isolated within itself, just by necessity of there's horses. And, you know, I can see an equestrian center sitting quite nicely against a tennis center. You know, an equestrian center is going to be horse fencing, and there'll be, you're eventing type of space, and then potentially some storage. I would imagine that the horses themselves will come from elsewhere around the Walkatipu.
That goes to my point, which is, you know, the traffic assessment, Mr. Carr is here, so we'll eventually get to that. But the if you're actually attracting, especially specifically equestrian, what you're dealing with is a large vehicle, a trailer, mum, dad and the kids, potentially two vehicles, and if it's an event, an equestrian centre and becomes a centre and you end up with events based around that, looking at the E&P show and the, you know, the amount of vehicle movements, essentially what we're talking through coming down either of the accesses is, you know, it ups the ante in terms of vehicle access.
Potentially, but there's, you know, if we're talking about this whole corridor,
yep,
again, the grazing area was where the, over in, underneath Shouter Country, the horse grazing area was where that equestrian center was initially proposed. So, and then there was some thought at the time to building an additional trail that connects these two areas, the two ends, that would be for horse use only due to the conflict issue.
Yeah.
And I would wager that the equestrian folks, which I'm not one, would argue that they're pretty severely underserved, and that sort of a bridle trail along there would be a huge bonus for them in terms of their ability to participate in their activity. So where it goes, how the movements are controlled, again, those are issues for design, I would think, and not the potential for the space itself.
Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. I have no other questions. Thank you, Dr. Bellwell.
Thank you.
We will adjourn for the morning break. We've got some space after that to hear.
Mr. Carr's turned up, sir.
Yes, it is. So.